back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 138. It's a Bloom Board night. It's a day later, but it's a Bloom Board night. It's not a fab preview. It's Wednesday night, doing a home run to barrel Outliers Bloom Board, one of our favorites on the show. We'll talk some recent news and much more. But before we do that, some housekeeping. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We are back from vacation. We are refreshed. Had a full body massage this morning, man. Jealous. It was. I'm not a massage person. It's only the second one I've ever had, but man, felt good. Jumped in the hot tub afterwards. The road trip back home with the kids were good on the way back. So it was a good day, a good couple days out in the woods. Not doing much. So I enjoyed it.
Perfect. Sounds perfect to me. So that's good. Glad you made it back. Glad you got loosened up, ready for a
dude. I'm limber, man. I'm ready to go.
Man, glad we're ready to go for a Wednesday night. We're doing double days. We're going back to back, folks. Back to back nights. So right. Bloomfield needed to get a little massage to get ready.
I'm gonna need something on Friday.
This is just clockwork for me, doing multiple shows back to back days. No big deal. But Bloomfield, this is a new level for him. So we're gonna test out his game real quick and see how it goes. But yeah, I hope everybody had a safe and happy, fun Memorial Day weekend. That was the weather starting to get nice around the country for the most part. There's still some rain in certain places, but it signals summer, which is always a beautiful thing. So baseball's ramping up about a third of the way through the season right now. We're seeing a lot of, you know, this Esther get off the pop moments type stuff on the diamond, and you'll start having to make some tough calls here real soon, and we'll hopefully help you with that on the fab shows and maybe going through some Bloom Boards up till that point in time. But let's get to it. This happened recently over the weekend, so most of you have heard about it and talked about it. We have not yet, so we'll bring it up now. Ronald Acuna Jr. out for the season with a torn ACL. That's a massive bummer, obviously. Adam Duvall should get a lot of run. Jared Kelnick should get a lot of run. What's your thoughts on this, Brian? You're not replacing Ronald Acuna Jr. So, and the worst part is the news dropped like 5 minutes after lock on Sunday night from Fab. So yeah, some tough stuff there.
And I wrote a very detailed deep dive on Ronald Acuna. Spent quite a bit of time on it last week for Baseball HQ, and that posted on Friday, which I guess it's fortunate that it happened before the injury, but I don't know. It's already been talked about. So it's just funny how it was Strider Acuna, Strider Acuna, late March. I think you had a tweet to that effect, and it's like, it looks like the answer might be Witt or Otani or something. We don't know the final answer yet, but it's just funny how a lot of the talk was just, it was insurmountable advantage to be able to get Ronald Acuna in a straight draft. And it's just that's fantasy baseball, man. It sucks, but you can still overcome it. Actually, my best team, which for me isn't saying much this year, but my best team so far is a Spencer Strider team. It's in second place. And like, I don't know, you gotta roll with the punches. So I don't know. I do like in terms of like going forward, I still really like Adam Duvall. Like I think as long as Atlanta does not fill that void with someone else, which they may do at some point, Adam Duvall is going to play every day. And even though Adam Duvall was a platoon guy for the Braves, only hitting against lefties, he's actually a good hitter against righties. Adam Duvall had an 857 OPS against righties, 18 home runs in 268 plate appearances last season. So yes, Adam Duvall has been bad, but it's hard to be, good and efficient when you play every 2 to 3 days and don't get in any type of groove. So it'll be interesting to see what Adam Duvall fab prices go for this coming week, but I'll be certainly in on that bidding.
Yeah, I know he was a popular target for some that had Acuna last week just to kind of cover their player situation. But now that we know what's really taking place, he'll be even more popular, like you're talking about. And like you mentioned, Duvall used to play every day previously and he was just fine. Like there was a year he had 40 plus homers, like 130 RBIs. Like the dude can rake. He could do what Marcelo Zuna is doing. We've seen that from Adam Duvall, and I think that'll be just fine for now. I guess it's more the defense, so they trust that the whole go around. It's a very talented team that has a ton of offense to begin with. like they signed Ramon Laureano to a minor league deal on Wednesday. Not saying that's the end all be all, but it goes to show that they're going to start testing the waters on a lot of things, it sounds like, to try to figure out where they need to go. Again, Laureano, not the answer in my books, but we've seen the Braves in recent years trade for Jorge Soler and was it Eddie Rosario in the same trade deadline? Like they got multiple outfielders. That could easily happen coming up here. I would not be shocked. A lot of teams are selling that, like Tommy Pham would be a good target.
Just going to say Tommy Pham.
Yeah, Tommy Pham would be an amazing target. Again, righty-righty with Duvall, but still Tommy Pham would be perfect for that. There's a lot of those types of players out there, like a Brent Rooker. Again, similar to Duvall, but you know what I'm trying to say. There's a lot of bad teams that have options in the outfield that get a make some noise. So we'll see where that all plays out with the Braves. The one other thing I was thinking of, and then we'll move on from the Acuña talk, it's pretty is what it is. Like my tweet said is, you know, it was Acuña, Strider, whatever. You were not wrong for taking Ronald Acuña number one. That was pretty much the consensus pick for a very valid reason. The one where I sat back, and I think we even talked about it on our shows, is it was always hard for me to spend like $70 in an auction or something, because the auction, you're limiting the rest of your team that way, where a snake draft, you're still drafting. So like the risk is so different in the snake and the auction. So the auction teams, I'm curious to see those Acuña teams where they sit right now. I'm curious to see where that goes going forward, because those are usually 15 team leagues. Your replacements are tricky, so on and so forth. In a redraft, it is what it is. Like you did the right thing. You got snake bit. That's just the way it goes. But it just goes to show you, like, you can do a stars and scrubs, but Acuña's price tag was different than a stars situation, and that's where that conversation came into play. And I think we even talked about it in the preseason. It was kind of interesting. That's one thing I thought about the other day. So
yeah, there was no advantage in an auction format to getting Acuña. I mean, obviously you're getting the best player, or what we thought would be the best player, but you're paying for it. It would be interesting to look in our four Bubba in the Bloom leagues where those Acuña teams end up. Hopefully Bloom team one, which is sitting in 57th place out of 60.
How many teams you got here?
Gotcha. Out of 60. Oh, I will fully admit when I have a true stinker, this is one of my worst teams of all time, but hopefully I can surpass one of the Acuña teams by the end of the year. Jeez.
You'll be just fine. And then Joe Arrico in the chat has a fun question, which we'll speculate for a lot of the offseason. Where are we taking him in 2025? If he can come back soon, like some of these other guys have, he'll be I wouldn't be shocked if by the main event season, you see him in the back end of the first round again. Like, just think about how Fernando Tatis came back. I know his shoulder is different than an ACL, but I think you could see it. We'll see.
So in my article, I actually did write about the possibility of Acuña being hurt as a reason to explain why he was playing so bad. And I drew a little mini comparison to Acuña this year versus 2022. Which was the last time he came back from serious knee surgery. Remember, 2022 was pretty bad for Acuña. Yeah. I think he only hit 12 or 15 home runs. And he ran like crazy, but the power was not there. And that was kind of the same exact thing we were seeing this season with Acuña. So I don't know. I have no idea what his ADP would be, but I personally would be very concerned taking Acuña in the top 30 next year, just given the injury history that is now, unfortunately, extremely long.
Yep, and we'll have plenty of time to discuss that as the offseason goes around. So let's talk about some more here. Francisco Alvarez, way ahead of schedule. He's going to set out for a rehab assignment on Thursday. He could be back with the Mets maybe this weekend, if not beginning of next week, which is way ahead of schedule. I think most people know my thoughts on Francisco Alvarez, but it's a little different now with the landscape of a lot of struggling / injured catchers. You're not paying a high, you know, draft day price on Francisco Alvarez. I actually got him for a couple dollars in leagues last week to stash. I dropped like a Bo Naylor for him to stash type situation. What's your thoughts on Francisco Alvarez coming back so soon? He's on a lot of waiver wires.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, so given the news that the stash price will probably be a little bit higher, but I'm worried about your guy. Worried about your guy, Omar Narvaez. Is he going to,
I don't think he's long for this one. Is it him or Tomas Nito?
Is he going to go the way of Jorge Lopez?
He's going to go the way of Kenta Maeda. Take him out back.
Worried about your guy, Omar Narvaez. Try and stash Alvarez if available. Yeah, because he was properly dropped in a bunch of leagues with no IL because it's a catcher and the timeline was much longer than we thought.
Yep, no doubt about it. A fun question here from Hollis in the chat is, is it true Bloom is the AFL champ on the links? Against me, yes. Yes,
he's one out of two years. Chris Clegg. Chris Clegg won this year.
Sniper.
We just had a second kid, by the way. Congrats. I don't know if Chris listens to the pod, but Chris, yes, congrats on number two.
Yep, little baby girl. So have fun with that, buddy. It's the best. Evan Carter of the Texas Rangers has the IL with a back, like lower back spasms. Apparently hasn't bothered him for a little while. Production has shown that, but I think there's more than just the backs that have slowed his production down. Wyatt Langford was activated to take his spot on the roster. Evan Carter, though, he was a guy that some people were starting to draft. Some people were starting to look into that situation. So what's your thoughts on this Evan Carter deal? They're saying it should be a minimal stay. We'll see. Back problems are back problems, but his production has struggled as well.
Yeah, back problems are back problems. Carter was actually the headliner, of course, my luck. While I was on vacation, I still wrote a speculator article for HQ. Did in-season downside projections, kind of like what we do in the forecaster. And Evan Carter, my downside projection for him was that he'd be in AAA by July. But I mentioned that Carter missed some time with recurring back issues in May. So he missed time in May. So I was wondering, like, I don't know, maybe he was playing hurt. And I looked a little bit further. He had, what do you have? I think in 2021. Yes, a stress fracture in his back back then, too. So, like, we always talk about back issues not, you know, not going away. Yeah. This is certainly, it seems like it sucks for a young guy like this. Maybe I should get him in touch with my masseuse.
In Texas, I bet you they have some pretty good ones down there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm just going to throw it out there. I think Jerry Jones might have some connections for him and take care of him.
Too low, man.
Well, that's what she said. Michael Giacchini in the chat says, can we acknowledge what a stud Mackenzie Gore is and has been? And yes, Ryan and I actually were talking about that off air before the show. Another 10 Ks against the Braves tonight. Matt Gore he's balling out. Love to see it.
Just let's see him hold it up over a full season. That's my big concern with Gore is what this looks like in the second half, given the injuries and the lack of workload for Mackenzie Gore. But yes, don't want to be Debbie Downer here. He has been freaking amazing and on a few of our teams for sure.
Yes, for sure. Lamont Wade Jr. has a grade 2 hamstring injury, which will put him out for at least 4 weeks, which is a massive bummer. Dude's an OBP king of baseball this season and hitting for average, plays every day now. At least he was playing every day now. But to me, this is a drop city situation.
Yeah, agreed. Bad timing because the average and the OBP was like so much better than it had been in recent years and so much better than against league average. It was actually a pretty useful cushion. But yeah, I think a drop. Yeah, dude, your Giants, man, they just cannot get out of their own way.
They keep winning, though. They're winning right now. It's ridiculous. They took two out of three from Philadelphia. Like, they keep winning, and it's just an ugly baseball team. It's an absolutely ugly baseball team. But Wilmer Flores, Bob Melvin said Wilmer Flores will get most of the action at first base, which is good to see. They called up a prospect that was running wild in the minors, but I think he's more for depth right now. We'll see how that one plays out.
And Flores hitting, 211, one home run, and 150 plate appearances. So I wouldn't go too much there for Wilmer.
Yep, we'll see. Edwin Diaz to the IL with a right shoulder impingement. That's lovely to hear. I don't know if this is a, hey, you're struggling, go sit on the IL for 15 days and figure it out, or is it really a right shoulder impingement? I guess we'll find out more in the future. You can't drop him yet, Ryan, but the production of late has been less than desirable is the nice way to put it.
And yes, I did not understand in draft season just the assumption that Edwin Diaz would miss an entire year with knee surgery and just snap back to being Edwin. I think he was the top drafted closer. It was him or Devin Williams, 1 and 1A, but
and not going well.
Yeah, neither of those two. Williams was a little bit more, I think, out of the blue, but I don't know. Yeah, you hold on to Diaz. We wonder if he's even hurt. The Mets are just an absolute mess. We know Jorge Lopez won't be
in baseball.
Yeah, won't be filling in for Edwin Diaz. I guess it's gonna be Adam Ottavino, who just blew a save on Tuesday. Reed Garrett has picked up a couple saves, but it's ugly. I mean, even Ottavino, he's been okay this year, but nothing's nothing special. So I think this is one of those where, like, we were talking before, like the closer market in Fab again this year hasn't, but there's been a little bit more turnover, but there hasn't, I don't think, been that, like, that game changing ad through Fab for closers. So I don't think there's going to be one here if Diaz is out for a while. So maybe speculate on Adam Ottavino, but don't get your hopes up too high.
And as Hollis said in the chat, Ottavino blew it today and yesterday. Yeah, he's been struggling.
Oh, he blew it today too.
Yeah, Garrett's been really good, but it seems like they don't want to use him full time in that role. So, and the Mets are the Mets. Like Jorge Lopez, for a fun, you know, side note, how much would you auction off that Lopez glove for if you caught it in the stands?
Dude, that thing can't be worth much.
Come on. The fact that a player threw that in the stands, like, there's something there.
You think he'd autograph it?
That's what I would look for. He's going to need money pretty soon. So, he might be playing in the independent league before we know it, or playing against the Savannah Bananas or something. So he might need that.
I can't imagine it goes for that much, but
I think it's pretty good. Pretty good. Boston Red Sox, Tyler O'Neill hits the IL with knee inflammation. They thought he was day-to-day, nothing crazy. Sent him back to Boston to get more imaging done just to kind of see where he's at. Didn't end well. So he's going to the IL. They still think it's a minimal stint, but time will tell on that one. But with O'Neill out for 10 days, you get a lot more Rob Refsnyder potentially, stuff like that. I don't think you can drop him just yet, though.
No, because the Tyler O'Neill pre-concussion, the April Tyler O'Neill was incredible. And that, we all know the risks with Tyler O'Neill injury-wise. It was nice to see, with a change of scenery, Tyler O'Neill go back to what we saw in 2019 through April. So given we saw that, I think you hold on to O'Neill until we get more, or if it's more serious. But it is alarming. We saw the Rizzo post-concussion dive last year. That was well-documented later on in the season. That's being well-documented now with O'Neill, and maybe the knee is part of that as well. But again, this is part of the package with Tyler O'Neill. It's not like these injuries are just going to go away. So I do worry pretty seriously about the rest of the season with Tyler O'Neill. He needs to be fully healthy to be Tyler O'Neill again, and hasn't been for quite a while outside of April.
Yep, outside of April is pretty much where it sits. So it's been rough. I have one more question for you, talking about guys banged up in collisions. Marcus Semien did not play on Wednesday. It was the first game he's missed since. Can you name that date?
Oh, my God. Good question.
I just wrote it up for the first pitch pod, so I know what it is. I'll say impressive.
I'll say September 2022.
Close. May 12th, 2022.
Okay.
Over 2 years ago was the last time Marcus Semien missed. And the reason I bring this up, not just because it's a cool little factoid about Marcus Semien, is you mentioned the lingering effects from the collision. He's been sore since he collided with Adelis Garcia on May 18th, they said. He's hitting like 4-for-33 over that stretch. So I don't know. There might be something there too.
That's not a man you want to be running into either. That's a big, like, boy.
The wall, you hit the wall on the wall one type thing. That's what that is. It's amazing he can pass tests. That's all I have to say, because that boy bulked up must be eating a lot of protein. That's all I got to say. So yep. Impressive. But all right, that'll wrap up our news for the show. Mr. Bloomfield, what do we have in store this evening?
All right. The legend, the old faithful, the standby, one of our favorites, is a Bloom board of home run to barrel rate. And so I'll explain this we did a, I think we do one, like one of these in season, then one off season every year. Figured it was good time to bring this back up this year, mostly because I was late in getting back from vacation, had to throw something together. But what we're looking at here is basically the concept of skills and results. A barrel is, for those that don't know, it's a Statcast measure of hitting a ball hard at the right, either a line drive or fly ball, hitting a ball hard at the right trajectory that produces an excellent result. And so a home run is obviously a result. It's what happens on the field. And so what we're looking at here is we want to see outliers between who's barreling the ball the most and not getting homers, or on the flip side, who's getting homers, but they're not really barreling up the ball that much. And so you would think over time, these things would start to even out, where players that are not barreling the ball as much, not getting those non-barreled home runs, start to get that that home run production decline. There are many layers to this, and we had a lot of great listener questions, comments that we'll get to probably as we go through this or at the end of the show. Home run to barrel, your league average is, I believe, roughly like 36-40%. So you can roughly say if you have, for example, 20 barrels, just divide it by two and maybe lop a couple off for home runs. It's something I think that is easy to understand from someone who doesn't, you know, for folks out there who do not dive deep into the statistics. You can just look at home runs, you can look at barrels next to each other and see what's going on there. But some of the layers that we're looking at on the screen here, we have a pulled percentage. So this was our Matt Chapman example last year, where we kind of dug deeper. Matt Chapman had a ton of barrels last season, not many home runs. And we found out that, like, basically all of Matt Chapman's barrels are going to the opposite field. And opposite field is much, you know, you want to pull your barrels. You don't get as good results if you go opposite field. So I have a pulled percentage just to add some context there. Some other things, ballpark is huge. So ballpark, each ballpark has their own home run to barrel. Comerica, for example, in Detroit is like death in center field. Baltimore and left field, those types of things. But so there's more, you know, we can dive deeper into this and peel back those layers of the onion even more. But I think just at a general, like, litmus test, if you want to look at power skill versus power result, home run and barrel is the way to do it. And it's funny, like the bat speed stuff that came out a couple weeks ago, like, caused everyone to kind of rerun, like, which metrics correlate best with power. It's barrel rate, and it's not even close. Like, barrel rate is by far the best metric to use to evaluate someone's power. So that's what we're looking at here.
Yep, these are things I can understand, unlike the bat stuff so far. So, yeah, looking forward to this as usual. So we'll start with the guys that are maybe quote-unquote unlucky is the way to go about it. We'll see the proper terminology. Someone will tell me I'm wrong, but Jesus Sanchez leads the way here. Two homers and 11 barrels and 18% home run to barrel, only 27% pulled. I will say Jesus Sanchez hit his third home run of the season on Wednesday. Yes. So that's a start in the right direction. This is a guy that, you know, Bloomfield has mentioned many times on the weeks where the Marlins face a lot of righties, because there is a lot of potential in Jesus Sanchez's bat, especially from previous seasons. But it just has not come to fruition just yet. So when you look at a guy like Jesus Sanchez, we've seen the ground ball rate go through the roof right now. What else do you see with him that might make you think there's a maybe there's hope for him at the end of this?
It's, to me, I know we talk about Jesus Sanchez a lot in the FAB preview episodes when the Marlins have a bunch of right-handed pitching coming up for the week, because Jesus Sanchez is pretty much a platoon bat. But the exciting thing about Sanchez is it's not just the power is there, despite the results not being there. The strikeouts have gone way down too, from 27% last year down to 21%. So fewer Ks, batting average has dropped a ton. It's at 224, was 253 last year. I don't think he deserves that either. And Jesus Sanchez runs. So when he does get on base, he's got six steals already. I think he's 6-for-7 on the base pass. So I think this is, like, quietly a five category strong side platoon bat that should be rostered in most leagues when the Marlins are facing righties.
Yep. No, it makes a ton of sense, especially in 15s with some 12 viability. I don't disagree with that at all, especially as more guys get hurt. So Jesus Sanchez could show up there and have a nice little second half of the season, potentially. His ballpark doesn't help him. That's obvious, but yeah, definitely could be some upside there in the end. Jaron Duran's a fun one. Three homers on 13 barrels. It's a 23% rate, 15% fly ball. Like, when I think Jaron Duran, I'm not thinking a lot of power to begin with. It's speed for me. He's not even running anymore, which is weird. Cora came out and said he basically shut him down, which is real bizarre. But when you look at Jaron Duran, we're seeing the home run to barrel rates. We're seeing these numbers kind of resemble a bit of, you know, previous seasons, actually. His hard hit rate's one of the highest it's been. So what do you see when you look at a guy like Jaron Duran on this one? Because it's, like, to me, this is who he is, but at the same time, I'm more optimistic he should have more home runs.
I mean, this is one of the guys with the lowest, like, pull percentage. So that pull, that 15%, he's only pulled like two out of his 13 barrels. And so, again, you're just not getting the same results when you go opposite field in general. versus when you pull. So that's a big reason why Jarren Duran is so low. And plus, like, I don't know, 13 barrels is not a ton for someone who has played a ton. You know what I mean? Like, his barrel rate is only, the hell is it at? 7%. So it's kind of like league average power. And maybe he deserves one or two more home runs so far, but nothing crazy to me. One other thing too, real quick. I got the league average barrel rate wrong at the top. I'm telling you, man, I'm rusty.
Isn't it like 54%?
Yes.
Yeah, 54%. Yeah, I wasn't going to correct you. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I remember like 53, 54% on that one.
So you can basically divide barrels by two and get roughly what their home run should be. Maybe add one or two home runs. So my bad. Correct the record.
Correct the record. There it is. Apologies here. Let's talk Austin Riley. We want to talk weird numbers. Austin Riley is definitely one of those guys. Three homers, 13 barrels, 23% home run to barrel rate, 23% pull rate. Obviously has a lot to do with it. At least pull barrel rate has a lot to do with it. And you look at his numbers, like his home run to fly ball, he's 19, 21, 21. It's 6.3% this year. That's like a massive drop off. Barrel rate's down compared to usual, but still not horrible. Hard hit rate's still fine. Like, there's a lot to like about Austin Riley, obviously. He had that oblique injury, which was a concern. But I just don't see this sustaining, let's put it that way.
And, like, I wonder, I mean, with the oblique, you wonder what, you know, how that's going to affect him going forward. So this one I have no, like, explanation for, man. Like, how do you go from being 33 home runs, 38 home runs, 37 home runs the last three seasons to three in 171 plate appearances? Like, Acuña gets a lot of talk for how bad as he has been, but, like, low-key Austin Riley's been one of the worst picks in fantasy this year. You kind of have to bet on the track record, though. Like, I almost, given how good Austin Riley's been for so long, like, I almost take the approach of we're digging in a little bit too much and just trust that a guy who has been elite for 3 years is going to be elite again. Could be wrong, especially with the oblique. That's the only thing that gives me some pause. But, like, if Austin Riley's right, I think this has to turn around, but it's been awful.
Yeah, it's been real brutal, but, like, I'm pretty, as long as he's healthy, I'm confident, because as a whole, the Braves have been disappointing compared to years past. Like, Olsen's starting to heat up. Albies has been bad. Harris hasn't been great. Like, Ozuna's been awesome all season. But as a whole, Acuña wasn't doing anything. It was a disappointing Braves start to the offensive side of things as it warms up in Atlanta. I think it could get real interesting there. But let's put it that way. We're going to star Joe's question for later because the other player is on the other side of the board. So we'll get to him in a minute. But I want to ask you about Vlad Guerrero Jr. since Joe's around. Let's talk some Toronto Blue Jays. Make him feel at home here. Yeah. Five homers.
Joe, grab the bottle. Grab the bottle real quick.
Five homers on 19 barrels. He's pulled 42% of them, which is good, probably on the ground. But what's interesting with Vlad is I'm looking at it. Barrel rate's the same as it has the last 2 years. Hard hit rate's through there. Almost 60% hard hit rate, which is nuts. 50% ground ball rate, which is standard for Vlad. It's a little higher than usual, but it's like you look at it, it's year after year, Brian, he hits the ball so dang hard, and then he hits it into the ground. And here we are again. So what's your thoughts on Vladito?
I mean, the only thing I'll say is, like, the barrels are there. And yes, Vlad hits a ton of balls on the ground. I'm not gonna deny that. But a barrel cannot be a ground ball. So yeah, a barrel has
once to be
a
line drive. Once I said that out loud, I was like, yeah.
So, like, he still crushed the ball 19 times. I worry a little bit about the pull rate, and I know a lot of Blue Jay folk. They got excited today when Vlad Jr. flied out to left field because he pulled the ball in the air.
Standards are high, folks.
It's kind of the same. It's the same deal with Vlad as it's kind of always been, except for that 1 year. I still think Vlad has deserved five more home runs. And if you give Vlad five more home runs, he's hitting, I mean, the dude's hitting 295. So he'd be hitting over 300 with 10 home runs, probably 30 runs in RBI. Like, it's not bad, dude. It's not bad. I'm not too worried about old Vlad.
But he's not, is the point of this conversation.
So. It's true. And I know you don't like. I know you're always the low guy on Vlad.
Hey, Vlad's it. On my tout wars team because he's an OBP machine. I would love more power in that spot. I love more power in that spot, but I digress. That's where we got it.
He's got the second, third most barrels of anyone on this list. So I don't know. The hard contact in the air is there. It's just not working out for him yet.
Left field very much, which exactly. is the problem.
And maybe that's the Matt Chapman problem because Matt Chapman was on the Blue Jays last year in that right center field fence with those changes. Maybe that is the problem, but I don't know. I'm probably being too optimistic on Vlad.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's talk Yainer Diaz on this one. Three homers and 11 barrels, 27% home run to barrel rate. 45% pulled, though. That's pretty good for Yainer Diaz. 45% pull rate, a little bit better than Vlad. He's still hitting 253. We'd like a little more out of him on that one. But as a whole, Diaz is letting people down in the power department. I've even had someone DM me about this. Barrel rate's down to 6.8% compared to what it was the last few years, but the hard hit rate is still pretty good. It's that just 54% ground ball rate is going to get you in a lot of trouble. So what are we thinking with Yainer? It feels like if he can just elevate the ball, he can be better than Vlad.
I mean, I hate to say it, but this looks a lot like what we've seen from Yainer Diaz. Elite bat to ball, ton of ground balls. This is like the Alejandro Kirk path. And you don't want to go down that path.
No.
So it's for me, the big problem is this huge spike in ground ball rate. Like you said, 11 barrels on three homers. That's quote unquote unlucky, but okay. Say give him five or six home runs on those 11 barrels. It's still been pretty rough for Yainer Diaz. You can't have a catcher hitting the ball on the ground that often. Needs to make some type of adjustment again in that park too. Houston left field Crawford boxes, homer to barrel rate should be quite a bit better.
I was saying if he could pull his barrels at 45%, there's room for another. We saw him go on tears last year, is what I'm trying to say, and that could easily come into play if he just elevates the ball a bit. But we'll have to wait and see on that one. Jackson Merrill, I don't have a ton on just because he's his first year. I don't really care about Jackson Merrill, but. Well, I don't have any shares. I was never interested in him. Like, it's just nothing family. There for me. Well, I care about him as a human being, but not as a fantasy player. So, do you have anything on Jackson Merrill?
I don't really. No. Mostly because we don't have a track record for what he can do.
That's my biggest thing. There's nothing to
but I do. I do care about him.
Well, you're a better man than I. It's been established many times on this show. That's right. Ian Happ. Fifth home run tonight. I've already screwed the pooch on this one when I jumped the gun and pulled him and dropped him on a roster. But four home runs, 13 barrels for Ian Happ, 31% barrel, home run to barrel rate, 54% pulled. And it's really started to come to fruition of late. Like I said, he went deep on Thursday. He's hit three home runs over his last four games. So three of his five home runs have come over the last four games. Let's get excited, folks. That's called a streak. But what's your thoughts on Ian Happ? Because he seems to be getting a little more comfortable over the last few games.
Yeah, always cool when someone on this list actually homers after you make the list. Ian Happ is not in store for any type of breakout or anything, but if he could just get back to being, a decent compiler, that's all we're asking for. And the other thing with Ian Happ, he had that hamstring injury that I think originally put opening day in question. And so you just wonder, like, did he come back too early from that? Or, is that affecting Ian Happ's slow start? I do worry about, and this has been more of a Cubs team-wide philosophy. It's gotten a little bit better, but the Cubs are not running nearly as much as they had been last season, and they're just not as good of a lineup as they were last year. But Ian Happ, only two steals does worry me, 2-for-3 on the base pass. So I'd like to see the running uptick, but I don't know. I think Ian Happ is back on his path to hitting, 20 home runs because he's going to get 650 plate appearances again. That's just what he does. So not too worried about Ian Happ anymore. Nice to see this recent rise and just hope he runs more.
Yep. I'm with you. It's just the conundrum with Ian Happ is he going to be an average guy? Is he going to be a power guy? We haven't seen him do both. It's always like one or the other. So kind of curious to see where he goes from here as the power seems to be the focus over the last few games. J-Rod, Julio Rodriguez. This has been a bummer so far this season. We got a guy that has four homers, 13 barrels, so 31% home run to barrel rate, 23% pulled barrel rate, which is obviously not going to cut it. But he has kind of warmed up a bit, two homers over his last five games. He's hitting for a better average of late. Maybe it's a sign of things to come. I still think the talent's ridiculous, so I'm not overly concerned with J-Rod. But what are you seeing when you look at Julio Rodriguez?
I'm not too worried either. I mean, this is a guy who is 23 or whatever and is coming off a 30-30 season and actually was had a slow start to his rookie year in 22 and was slow starting in 2023 again. So Julio has shown the ability. I'm not saying he's a slow starting guy. I don't even know if that's a thing, but he's shown the ability to turn things around very quickly in season. So not super concerned about Julio. I do just wonder about the pull rate. Like I he needs to get around on the ball more. 23% for pulling your barrels is pretty low. And I think it was Eric Samulski who had a comment about something with inside pitches that he's not getting around on that Julio isn't. So maybe an adjustment's needed there, but in general, no, I'm not worried about Julio Rodriguez. But man, dude, like what a, it's been a bummer of a boomer bust first round.
Big this time. Year.
Acuña, Strider, Julio, Corbin Carroll, just awful. And then you've got Betts, Otani doing Whit, their thing.
Tucker.
Yep, Judge. There's kind of been no in between.
Tatis has kind of been a bummer.
Yeah, semi.
Yeah. So it's been weird. And speaking of the boom part of the first round, Bobby Witt Jr. See, we're talking about a lot of guys that have kind of disappointed so far this season. And then you got Witt on the list. That's why these lists are so much fun. You got the goods, the bads on here. Witt has 9 home runs on 29 barrels. No one on either side of this chart has 29 barrels. So that tells you how good he's doing. 31% home run to barrel. If we use that 54% metric, let's just have fun with this. That's like 15 home runs. He's like 6 home runs short right now on this grand scheme of things. And he comes with a 14% pulled barrel rate. Like Bobby Witt Jr. has these elite skills and he hasn't even mastered them yet, which is scary because he's not pulling it that much. The dude's a freak and he continues to get better each season. So what do you got on Bobby Witt?
Yeah, you can hit the ball wherever. As long as if you barrel it that often, I don't really care. Like, yeah, we can't. Bobby Witt has 9 home runs, and so he's on a 30 home run pace, and that's just fine with me because everything else that he does. Bobby Witt is 4th in baseball in barrels. It's Aaron Judge with 40, Juan Soto 34, Otani 32, and then Jesus. Bobby Witt with 29. Giancarlo Stanton is number 6 on that list, by the way.
Of course he is. We should do barrel per strikeout rate and see what Stanton looks like. That'd be a fun one. All right. Bobby Witt's teammate, Vinny P. I hope Gialdi's around for this. Vinny Pascantino, 5 home runs on 16 barrels is 31%, but a 50% pulled barrel rate, which is obviously very good. This is so far the best barrel percentage of Pascantino's career. Close to his best hard hit rate as well. Dude's doing it really, really well, just not fully producing. It could be a factor of Kaufman. Who knows? But the skills are there, and he's looking healthy, which is good to see.
Absolutely, man. To have this power, to be able to pull that power is awesome, and to only have 5 home runs to show for it, while not awesome, makes Vinny P an excellent buy low, trade target, whatever you want to talk about in trade leagues, especially because the K rate is so damn good. The plate skills are so good. 14% strikeout rate this year for Vinny P, career 12%. Like he is, I feel like Vinny P, you tack on the age, like I feel like he's ready to explode. We haven't seen it yet, but like this is probably the most excited I will get over someone who is hitting 224 with 5 home runs a third of the way in the season. Everything looks good beneath the hood for me.
Yep, he looked good. Let's hope the leg is okay right now because that's what we're waiting for, thanks to Byron Buxton. We got a few more guys on the list here. I want to get to Dansby Swanson for sure, and then we can let you talk about your boy if you want.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're skipping over my guy. That's deliberate.
Saving him for last since he's starting to fall into Bichette these days. But Dansby Swanson, 4 homers with 11 barrels. That's a 36% home run to barrel rate, 27% pulled barrel rate. And it's weird with Swanson, like he missed time on the IL, so who knows how healthy he is right now. But it has been a massive disappointment, hitting 204, striking out 28%. It's just been a kind of lost year, it feels like. But then you look at his barrel rate, which is in line, his hard hit rate's in line. So he's doing all those things good, but a lot of it's going on the ground with these days when it's not getting barreled up. So what's your thoughts on Mr. Dansby Swanson?
I'm not worried. Similar to what we were talking about with who the hell was it? Austin Riley. Just like I will always trust the track record over 2 months every single time, unless like, I mean, you mentioned the injury, so maybe that's something, but I'm not worried. I think we did get, it wasn't a listener question for the show. I think somebody tweeted at us. Yes, Rod L tweeted, would you still hold on to Dansby Swanson in a 12 teamer, which I'll throw back to you, Bubba, since you're the aficionado of the 12s.
I would say yes. I think I do have him in 12s. I'm still a believer in him. Also for the fact it's harder and harder to find 12s you trust over Dansby Swanson. So I'm in with Dansby right now. I get the concerns. The batting average is the worst part. The 204 average is dreadful, but I think that Cubs team's going to figure it out sooner than later. They're all scuffling right now. It's like, say, a Suzuki's still banged up. There's a lot of question marks there in Chicago. So I think let it heat up. Let's get some windy days in Chicago, and Dansby will be fine. It sucks because Dansby's hit like seventh or eighth. That's the bummer.
I know. That is a bummer. And he's another one who is not running nearly as often as he did last year. Never mind. I'm looking at the wrong thing. He is running. Now he's got 4 steals, so I don't know if he gets to maybe 10 or something, but I don't know. Dansby is 100% rostered in NFBC 12 teamers, 90% started in NFBC 12 teamers. So
he's a middle infielder in most of my leagues that I have him in. He's not the starting shortstop, he's a starting middle infielder for me. So
you're right, man. The Cubs have to turn this around soon.
They have to. They're too good. Talent. They're too good there. Justin Steele looked good his last start. Hopefully that continues. Shoto will be fine. Like, there's lot to like there, and they get to play teams like the Pittsburgh Pirates, who has O'Neal Cruz on that team, who has 7 home runs with 21 barrels for a 33% home run to barrel rate on a 57% pulled barrel rate. I'm just going to give you the floor, Bloomfield, because this is your boy. What's your thoughts here on O'Neal Cruz, who, if he's not striking out, I guess he's doing good things for you?
Hey, man, I'll take 247, 7 homers, 4 steals. Not the worst. It's better than Bichette. So we have for those who don't know, a few episodes ago, we did a little side bet, rest of season, O'Neal Cruz versus Bo Bichette. And of course, Bo Bichette has since, heated, I don't want to say those, taken off, but he's been up. Good.
Yes,
he's what? Is.
He's heating up.
Yeah, heating up. Heating up from like Antarctica. Oh, so,
okay.
I don't know. So back to Cruz, like, a 15% uptick in strikeout rate. I am worried about that. The plate skills are pretty bad with O'Neal Cruz, and he hits a ton of ground balls, 51% ground ball rate. That's concerning, but he just hits the ball so hard. Like, ground ball, fly ball, line drive, it kind of doesn't matter. He's hitting it hard no matter what, and that's why we're seeing – it's hard to get like an 18% barrel rate when you're hitting the ball on the ground 50% of the time. It's like – a lot of your batted balls are either a barrel or a ground ball. So I don't know. I think O'Neal Cruz can approach 30 home runs this year. It's just, will the average stick at 247? That's my main concern. I don't see that happening. I see it dropping back down to 220, 230.
Which makes Bichette even better. All right, let's look at the, I guess, overachievers side of the board here. And I'm just going to group these three together because it's hilarious. There's three players that have had 100% home run to barrel rate. So for the common folks, that is regression coming. Eddie Rosario, 7-for-7. Isak Paredes, 9-for-9. But that's what Isak does. That's what he does. And it's weird because he only has a 44% pulled barrel rate, which is impressive in the grand scheme of things. And then Dalton Varsho, 10 homers on 10 barrels. 90% pulled barrel rate though. So that is almost like you could say you'll never see 100%, but at least there's some justification there in a roundabout way with 90% pulled barrel. The Isak one is funny though, because 9-for-9 pulled barrels, but only 44% pulled. So that means 5 of his 9 home runs, just top of my head, quick math, didn't go to college, were not barrels. So that's pretty fun stuff there because he pulls them all. He pulls all his home runs. So just quick math on that. But yeah.
So he did last year, right? So Isak Paredes last year had 31 home runs on only 23 barrels. Had more home runs. One of two players, TJ Friedl was the other, with more home runs than barrels last year. The reason why is because Isak Paredes was pulling 91% of his barrels. It was a cheat code. It's what he does. I don't see that happening this year. It's down to that 91% has dropped to 44. Like, I wonder if teams have now adjusted. I'd be interested to see like a zone chart of Isak Paredes, and are they pitching him more outside than teams did last year? Because I actually think this year, even though Isak Paredes has that, you know, that reputation of being an extreme pull hitter, he has not been this year. So while it's interesting to see him up top again for the second time, I don't know if this one is nearly as legit as we saw last year. So I'm concerned about that one. The one I'm not concerned about is Dalton Varsho, because like you said, Abubba, he pulls pretty much every single one. And that is, you know, that's what he's doing. And that's what you do in Rogers Center. So very nice to see Dalton Varsho. I think that's something he could close to maintain, this 100% homer to barrel, same number of homers as barrels, just because he pulls the power so much.
If he only had a teammate that played first base that could use some help with this.
I know, man. Like, they should probably talk together, right?
Maybe collab.
Like, have a little chat. Keep Bo Bichette out of it, you know, while Bo Bichette is nursing his next knee injury. That's maybe when we can have the training session from Varsho over to Vlad.
Ay. Let's talk J-Ram. Jose Ramirez, 16 home runs, 17 barrels, 94% home run to barrel, but a 76% pulled rate, which gives a little bit of luxury to it. It's impressive. Over like the last 2 weeks, J-Ram's hitting .382 with six of those home runs. Dude's just mashing everything. People were worried about J-Ram at one point after the slow start. I think he's just fine, folks. I think we're good. So, this beast mode. Could he sustain a 94% homer to barrel? Not many can, but I have zero concerns about J-Ram. Like, so what's he hit? Like 15, 20 more still? Like, I'm not worried about him.
Right. That's where you're digging a little too much and nitpicking if you kind of fade J-Ram because he's on this list. J-Ram is incredible. One of the as these others were rising, J-Ram finally falls, I think, out of the first round. Yep. Right at that back end wheel in drafts this season, and 15 teamers for sure. Quietly one of the best values in that second round, like going right around Austin Riley, Matt Olson. Like, it's a big change in where your team is if you took J-Ram instead of Austin Riley. And it doesn't, I mean, every skill looks the exact same with J-Ram as it has previously. Like the elite contacts there, he's running quite a bit and he's successful. 80% success rate on the base pass. And yeah, the power is there. So he's a beast.
He is a beast. He's as good as Barry Bonds or better, he says. So don't forget that.
Did he say that?
Oh, he said that a couple days ago. Like, I think it was Monday when they were in Coors. He said he's better than Barry Bonds. So then on Tuesday, the Cleveland broadcast put a comparison through the same amount of games. And Bonds is ahead of him, but it's actually really close. Like, it's really close. It was funny to see.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was J-Ram's like, he's a dude. He's a dude. So it's pretty funny to see. I'm going to go Anthony Santander. This is interesting. 9 homers, 10 barrels, 90% home run to barrel, 70% pull, which you need to do in that ballpark. That makes a ton of sense in Baltimore. Dude's hitting .204, though. He is on the struggle bus in Baltimore. So the power's there, but the overall skill sets are diminishing, it feels like, for Santander. But maybe there's some hope. What are your thoughts on Anthony?
I just think the batting average is always going to be bad because Santander just hits so many damn fly balls. 55% fly ball rate. That's absurdly high. It's good for power, but it's death for your batting average. So, like at HQ, we're projecting Santander to hit .241 the rest of the way. I think I'd even take the under on that going forward, just given the loft in Santander's swing. Interesting to see. I think he's a switch hitter, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he's a switch hitter. So it'd be interesting to see how much of these pulled lefties, the right or left. Right? Yeah. That's one where a simple board and one number doesn't show you. So I'd like to dig into that a little more. But super worried about Santander in batting average leagues. I don't see .220, .230, maybe something like that.
Well, he has 6 home runs as a righty and 3 as a lefty. Can't tell you if they're pulled or not. I'm just doing a quick search on Fangraphs splits, but 6 of them are right-handed, 3 are left-handed. So tells you a little start of it there. I'm guessing those right-handed ones were pulled home runs. Just going to throw that out there. All right. This one stings. And I joked about it a while back, but Randy Arozarena, he has 8 home runs on 9 barrels, 89% home run to barrel, only 33% pulled barrels, which is bad. Dude's hitting a .181 with 8 homers and 7 steals. He's going to go 20-20 and might not hit 200 this year. This is brutal. So what's your thoughts on Randy Arozarena? Because this is one of those guys that you just set it and forget it, and it might not be a good thing.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the bloom was on the Rose this year, and I had a Arozarena in more than a few leagues. I just love the track record, the baseline. I thought 30-30 was doable, and yeah, I guess he's going to hit 20-20, but like, Jesus, man.
Yeah.
I don't – he's hitting 159. Like, good hell. That's terrible. The placement on the bloom board is bad. Because you would think Arozarena, especially given the low pull rate, 33%, that's one of the lowest of anyone on this overachiever list. So Arozarena probably really only should have, I don't know what Tampa's, you know, how that park, how Tropicana plays for homer to barrel, but Randy probably should only have like 5 home runs, man. And like, that would be terrible. So if anything, he's been a little fortunate, but man.
Oh, he's been very fortunate because it's been brutal. And a lot of it was early in the season. He's kind of really hit the skids of late. So he's someone that they're talking about trading for the Braves. Maybe that'll help him a lot. We'll see. That might get him in a different team, different setup, and something to look forward to. But it's rough right now. Jurickson Profar, 8 homers, 9 barrels, same as Randy, with a 56% pulled barrel rate. Profar went deep again on Tuesday, then yesterday. But we've talked about Profar a few times. He's just been super productive, driving in runs. Obviously, we've all been, I think, maybe obviously is the wrong word, but we've said he can't sustain this all year, his production already, before even seeing this board. But this stands out even more like, dude, you're still pulling it, which is nice, but yeah, this is not who you are.
Yeah, and he continues to prove me wrong whenever I say it. I don't see it. Profar is someone who, over the last 2 full seasons, has hit .242. And all of a sudden you're going to hit .323 with basically the same level of hard contact, a slightly better strikeout rate, but pretty much nominal. And being on this list, having power skills that don't support what you've done on the surface. So I'll continue to fade Jurickson Profar. It's nice that he's hitting third for the Padres every day. That's a decent lineup, but, I don't know. This just looks like the same guy who's just been the last 2 seasons. And the last 2 seasons, Jurickson Profar has pretty much been unrosterable.
Yeah, he's usually a platoon player, not a full-time guy. So, yes, very, very difficult to enjoy there. Let's talk about Mr. Josh Naylor, another Cleveland Guardian on the list. Another Cleveland Guardian is mashing baseballs. 15 homers on 17 barrels. JRAM had 16 on 17. JRAM pulled the ball 76% of the time. Naylor's only pulling the ball 53% of the time, which stands out quite a bit. But he's doing it all. He's hitting .240 right now, which you'd hope for a little better, but overall has been quite productive. The power's there. He's driving in runs, even 3 stolen bases. Doesn't strike out a ton. I've been Team Naylor for a long, long time. I don't know if he can sustain this kind of a pace, but I've even said in years, like last year, he's 25-15 type guy. He's clearly on a path to that, I think.
Yeah, and while Naylor's maybe like slightly ahead of his skis in the power department, dude has been BABIP to death batting average. Like, should not be hitting .240. This is basically the same profile, the guy who hit .308 last year. The Josh Naylor's BABIP has dropped from .326 down to .205 from last year to this season, with harder contact and pretty much the same strikeout rate. And the same ground ball rate. So, like, there is no reason why Josh Naylor should be hitting .240 if a slight pullback in power means 50 points in batting average. If those luck factors neutralize, I will gladly take it. Josh Naylor is awesome.
Yes, he is a beast. It's nice. He's been a popular name on the show for a few years now. People are starting to realize it this year. So it's fun to watch on the old Twitter there. See how that one goes. Goldilocks, Paul Goldschmidt, he's been crying about his production and eating days off, this and that. And then You look, 7 home runs on 8 barrels. That's pretty lucky with a 50% pulled rate. Maybe he should cry some more. But Goldie's on the struggle bus. Christian Walker is smoking him this season. What's your thoughts on Goldie here? Because I think Father Time's catching up on the big man.
A little harsh on my man, dude.
It's just because we have a bet, so I'm having fun with it.
Man, has been heating up lately, hasn't he? I read somewhere where Goldschmidt, I should try and find the link, but
he has. He's like three home runs in the last 4 games or something like that.
And he said he found some issue with his swing and fixed it like a week ago. So who the hell knows if that's, you know, actionable or what, but it is nice to at least see, yes, Goldie hit 412 with 3 homers in the last week. So I don't know. I don't think this is going to be like a super heavy turnaround for Goldschmidt, but it's just nice to be able to see that he can at least hit the ball hard. So I'm not too concerned about my guy, Oldschmidt.
Very, very good. Oldschmidt. Paul DeJong, I think we can pass on that one. I think we all know where that's headed.
We know where that's going. To further nail that coffin, a 38% pull rate on the barrels. It's just not gonna be good from here on out for DeJong.
This one's interesting to me. Michael Massey, who we like, he's hurt again with a back injury. 6 homers, 7 barrels. That usually screams regression, but an 86% pulled rate. This is fun because on the flip side, you got Vinny P, 50% pulled rate, unlucky. You got Bobby Witt, 14% pulled rate, unlucky. Now you got a teammate who pulls the stunt out of the baseball, and he's kind of overachieving. So I love Michael Massey when healthy. Obviously not healthy again. Could he hit this many home runs? No, but I think there's definitely a power bat there based on the profile.
Yeah, I think Massey's one who, like, you know, the power isn't great. He's not a power hitter, but I think he's got league average oomph. And if you can pull that and maybe get a few more homers out of it, I think that works. This back injury for Massey came at the worst possible time. Because he was on a bunch of my teams. I know that. And me was too. Really me hitting too. Well. Like, I mean, 15% K rate, man. Hitting .294. Like, it's not just the home runs with Massey. It's kind of the whole package, despite not running. But I like Michael Massey a ton. I hope the back injury is something minor, because that would really suck if it derailed what could be a pretty, you know, modest breakout season.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Gunnar Henderson's on the list here, 17 homers on 20 barrels. Jeez. Which, you know, like, you go, man, the guy hits the ball great, but a 45% pulled barrel rate makes you wonder on this one of how sustainable is it. But he's been a beast, hit a grand slam on Wednesday, like, so that's 18 home runs now. He's just crushing everything in sight right now.
Yeah, I'm not worried. He is absolutely crushing everything, and he's 22 and getting a lot better in year two. Like, you could nitpick this and say, oh, Henderson should only have 12, 13 home runs, but he's been awesome, and I think we'll be a first rounder next season. It is interesting. I mean, Gunnar is a lefty and not pulling the ball, going opposite field at Mount Baltimore. Like, that's not good, but it's a very, very minor thing. If anything, it helps his batting average. Because if you're going the other way, making hard contact,
a lot of doubles.
Exactly. That massive real estate in left field in Baltimore. You take that trade off if you're Gunnar.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was looking at for the pulled numbers, he's 10 of his 17 homers have come at home. So it's not like he's maybe they're all pulled at home. I don't know. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but he's still doing damage at home. So that's good to see. We got two more names on the list here. CJ Abrams, 9 homers, 11 barrels, 64% pulled. That's pretty impressive for CJ, is the best way I could say it, especially for a guy slumping of late. The numbers might have been even better at one point in time, at least in the pulled barrel department. But what are you thinking on CJ Abrams?
For me, it's just nice to see him have 11 barrels. I mean, he's kind of maintaining the barrel rate that we saw last year. I don't think CJ Abrams is a one-trick pony at all. And this is kind of showing that. Yes, maybe he should only have 5 or 6 home runs right now, whatever. But I think CJ Abrams, I mean, he hit 18 home runs last year. I think he's a legit 20 home run bat. Yeah, he struggled a little bit lately, but ebbs and flows, whatever. More worried, he has more home runs than steals. Did you think that would be a thing 2 months into the season, that CJ Abrams would have 9 homers and only 8 steals? That one, no. I'm a little not worried about, but like, it's a little confusing.
which is crazy because the Nationals run wild. So
yes,
I'm wondering if there's just something going on with CJ Abrams, like the whole Jaren Duran thing when we find out he's running early, and then Alex Cora basically put the kibosh on him running because they're worried about him. They wanted his defense board or something, like some weird theory behind it with Alex Cora. I wonder if there's something odd in Washington, which would be really strange because everybody else is running, but maybe there's something else there.
Abrams is running quite a bit, not as much as last year. It was a 43% run rate. This year it's 27, which is still a lot. The problem is he hasn't been as successful. He was 92% last year on steals, 67% this year. So he's only 8 for 12, if my math checks out.
Damn, that's not good. Not good for an elite guy. Something to keep an eye on, to say the least. And the last one here is Bryce Harper, 13 homers, 16 barrels, 25% pulled barrel rate. I'm not worried because I literally watched him hit so many Oppo tacos in that ballpark in Philadelphia. Like you said with some other guys, as long as he's barreling the ball like this, Harper can hit it out of any ballpark at any spot. Like, he's one of those guys where it doesn't concern me as much.
Agreed. Not worried one bit about Bryce.
Yeah, he's fine. He's starting fights in San Francisco. It's traditional like any other, so he's good.
That's right. I kind of missed that. It was against Kyle Harrison, right?
Yep. He's doing Bryce Harper things, so not worried about him one bit.
Where's Hunter Strickland?
Oh, they on the Giants post game, they showed that clip. Trust me.
Classic.
It was there. All right, let's hit up some listener questions here. First, we'll start with Joe Arico in the chat. Who would you rather buy, Austin Riley or Randy or Rosarena?
I'm going to go Austin Riley.
I'm going to go Austin Riley as well. That is where I'm at, because I think there's a big rebound coming, and Randy's not showing many signs of life right now. So I'll take my chances. Better team, better offense. All right, some listener questions from the old Twitter bot here. Rodney Leonard says, would you hold Dansby in a 12-team league? We talked about it. We're good there. A few other ones here. BP at futures_bet. I have three players on this list in a lonely league. I have Ian Happ and Jesus Sanchez. In a mixed league, I have Yainer Diaz. Looks like Happ is figuring it out, but what about the other two? Can they turn this around? You were pretty optimistic on Jesus, right? You were good.
Yes,
there.
It's just it's a platoon. So have, from a roster build standpoint, just know that. But yes, I'm very optimistic on Jesus, who homered tonight, I believe, with his third. So,
yeah, what were you thinking on Yainer Diaz? Because I kind of got mixed reactions from you on that one.
Super heavy ground ball rate. He was the one with the huge spike in ground ball rate. Yes. I think from low 40s up to mid 50s. So that needs to be fixed and quickly, because Yainer Diaz should not be hitting the ball on the ground.
I'm still optimistic on Yainer Diaz, but that is a concern. It's kind of like the concern I had with Bo Naylor being a completely different hitter this year. Like, what are these guys doing? They're totally different profiles. I think Yainer could he's at least making hard contact still. So I think there's a way we see that kind of come to play, and some optimism there. All righty. Kyle Bland at Blandalytics, good old pitcherlist.com. What? No Matt Chapman? That was from Kyle Bland. Just kind of letting us know. So that checks out. Little Book of Calm, or Calling My Shot. Sorry, it's just tradition, like habit. I just want to point it out because he was being humble and didn't want it pointed out. But he wrote about home run to barrel in anticipation of this board. Home runs to barrel is unsurprisingly heavily influenced by ballparks, and then you mentioned earlier as well. Adjusting by park-specific home run to barrel, I expect the Pittsburgh, St. Louis, KC contingent to continue to underperform. We had two Royals on that list, that's for sure. So he has a whole sheet. He has a whole article about it. So go check that out on Calling My Shot. But did you have anything else to add to that? I just wanted to bring it up for him.
I wish I ran the ballpark numbers for this year before the show, but life got in the way. So
yes, no complaints here. Eric Samulski, eager to hear your thoughts. Jesus popped in my pulled fly ball article this week. Cruz and Vladito had launch angles on their pulled fly balls that were too low. Seems like Julio has an issue on inside pitches, squares the ball up just 22.7% of time on contact there, which is the worst of any Mariners starter. So kind of hit on all these guys already, but any other thoughts on them?
No, great info from Eric, who you should all be following. He's a smart dude.
Our buddy Corbin Young, Vlad, Bobby Witt, and O'Neill Cruz in another category with barrels. Besides the obvious hitters with raw power like Riley, which would be your top 1 to 2 regress in barrels to homers?
Let me pull the damn thing back up. From the underperformers?
I'm guessing it's a positive regress. Besides the obvious ones.
So. I was going to say Austin Riley to me is the obvious one. Like, the barrels haven't been there, but I think it's just a slump. So I'm not worried. Julio, but that's not very action worthy. I'll say Vinny P.
That's where I was going. Vinny P was my guy. That's the one I was looking at. Vinny P and maybe Ian Happ, what we're seeing here lately, but Vinny P would be the dude for me as well. All right. A couple more here. John Wilder says, any hope for Gleyber Torres under the hood? Seems like every time I look at the Yankees are putting up 8 runs and Gleyber is 0-for-4. Yeah, it's brutal. That's one of those that I was very high on and drafted with a lot of people I know, and I got like 0 or very few Gleyber shares, thank God, because it's been – he went 0-for-4 again tonight with 2 walks. Like, that's – and he's 0-for-2 with 2 walks, I should say. He's hitting .227 right now, Ryan, with 4 homers and 4 steals, 24% K rate. Anything you see with Gleyber Torres that gives you any kind of optimism?
Other than the track record, not really. We've talked a little bit about the, I don't want to say broken hand, hit by pitch on the hand early in the season that maybe explains some of this. But other than that, it's been really bad. I don't see any signs of it turning around.
One of the things that does stand out a little bit when it comes to Gleyber, not pulling it as much and going oppo a lot more. So it might be an approach change, could be because of the hand slower to the ball, but he's not pulling the ball very much, which is a bit concerning. HD on Twitter at Dawn HD 2012. Can you cross reference their ground ball percentages? Some seems like a lot of guys that put punish worms on this list. No. Yes, we discussed that. Definitely something there. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, they're the ground ball guys won't. I mean, the barrels can't be ground ball. So I don't think ground ball guys are getting punished by this. Barrels do account for that. The success rate on barrels is very high. And one of the questions we have in the actual like live chat from Hollis is just in simple terms, would you consider the left column guys, basically the underachievers and buys, and the right column guys sells, which are the overachievers? In simple terms, yes. If you're making hard contact and not getting results, trust the skills instead of the results. And that works both ways.
Yeah, more often than not, that's the way. But like, that's why we say like Bryce Harper, no, that's who he is. We're good there. Don't like go crazy there. But there's a bunch of guys where you can, like Paul DeJong, go trade him if someone will give you anything for him. Knock yourself out. Yep. Michael Cicchini says, I have a pitching question. Shallow 12 teamer. Would you want
think Bubba might have cut out mid question. So
sorry, I have a pitching question. Shallow 12 teamer. Would you want Kikuchi, Ober, Chris Sanchez, or Schmidt?
I would go Chris Sanchez and Ober.
Yeah, it's a tough one because Schmidt's strikeouts are up. He's pitching really, really well. I'd probably go Schmidt and Ober. That's nothing against Chris Sanchez, but I think I'd go Schmidt and Ober. It's a fun one for sure.
Just a heinous slight to my guy, Christopher Sanchez.
Stephen Crawford said he just traded for Riley, so enjoying this talk about positive regression. Yeah. There you go.
I wonder what was the trade?
Yeah, what did he give up? Let's see the other side of the story on that one real quick before we get too excited. But Ryan, that'll do it for another episode in the books. A lot of good listener chats in the chat here and questions on Twitter and fun home run to barrel stuff. Curious to see where this dust settles when we do our end of the year one like usual. But any final thoughts?
No, thanks for sticking through my probably hear my voice and me coughing on the video, but we'll get it fixed at some point. It's been about 3 weeks now, but all good. It's that time of the year, I guess.
So. It's that time of the year. My sinuses / itchy eye. I've never had itchy eyes till this year. Like, they're burning last night. Like, it's been a rough go in the allergy world these days. People probably don't care about that, but it's that. And StreamYard's been having an issue, so I apologize for the technical difficulties here and there throughout the show. I think we powered through it for the most part without too many issues. So hopefully you guys enjoyed. And we'll be back tomorrow night because it's Wednesday. We're tomorrow night, Thursday night, for your week 11 Fab preview, which will be an absolute banger, I hope, because last 2 weeks have been kind of good, but nothing crazy. So we'll see where things go. Maybe we'll find some pitchers to stream. Don't hold your breath. But maybe we'll find
I wouldn't. Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, wouldn't. You're getting a little frisky there, Bubba. I don't know.
I'm trying to have a little fun with this one. But until then, make sure you have to follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. Until next time, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 138. Catch you all later.